intersection of good drinks, good music, and good times. This is Hops and Spirits Bar Conversations.
I think we're just going worldwide with the way these shows are going lately. We've been up to Canada, to Australia, and I think we're back to Canada again, although I know he travels down to Nashville a good bit. We've got country artist, songwriter, his latest single, She's My Religion, is out now. Let's just get right to it and welcome in Devin Cooper.
How you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm real good. Thanks for having me.
Now, are you up in Canada right now, or are you traveling back and forth?
I'm up in Canada right now, so I'm hanging out at home in Calgary.
There you go. There you go. Now, I know down here in Kentucky, we decided to have a cold spell after being 70 degrees like the last couple of days. We're down in like the 20s and 30s. So how's it up there?
It's actually been really nice the last couple of days. It's been, I guess I'm trying to convert it in my head from Celsius to Fahrenheit, so it makes sense. We've been in like the 60s the last couple of days.
Ooh, I'm jealous.
But it's going to drop to like, I'll say 10 Fahrenheit.
Ooh, there you go.
This week. So it's been in Celsius. It's been 17 degrees Celsius for the last couple of days here in Calgary. So there's no snow on the ground. It's all melted. It's all nice. And now we're supposed to get a big dump of snow tomorrow. And it's supposed to get to freezing temperatures and back to cold again.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like spring, right?
It does not. It's the spring, the deception of spring that's happening.
Now, if folks are watching, they can see you've got a few beverages behind you. So I'm guessing you enjoy collecting a few things. And since this is Bar Conversations, I got a little whiskey tonight, a little barrel bourbon, a batch 35. You drinking anything good?
Perfect. I actually have a single malt whiskey made just outside of Calgary. See if I can get that
nice
light shining on it. I don't know if you can see it. From Eau Claire Distillery. This is batch number 4. It's made in Turner Valley, just south of Calgary. And we've worked with Eau Claire Distillery on a bunch of stuff over the past few years. So this is kind of their premium top-of-the-line one, and it's real tasty.
I like that. So are you a single malt guy, bourbon, whiskey, all? What's your preferred choice, I guess?
Kind of all of the above. definitely been on a bourbon kick lately, actually. I've been kind of dipping my toes in that avenue and trying to bunch out. I don't have a huge wealth of knowledge in terms of describing whiskeys. I am better at describing wines than whiskeys, but
yeah, they're close.
I've been dipping my toes in the bourbon world lately.
There you go. See, and what's funny is because you've got the single malt, we've just been dipping our toes into single malt, because I remember having it like 2-3 years ago, and I was like, what is this thing? It's not good. And it's funny how taste buds change, because I had one recently. I was like, you know what? This is actually pretty good. It's pretty good.
I mean, there's some great stuff. There's also some equally as bad stuff. Eau Claire Distillery, pretty much everything they make is great, and I wasn't even paid to say that, so.
But if they want to, you know, you take it, right?
Absolutely.
Now, I also know, like you said, you dabble in whiskeys of all sorts. I think you also dabble in motorcycles as well. How do you get into motorcycles and things like that?
Yeah, well, growing up, my dad had a custom motorcycle shop. He built custom frames and custom Harleys and shipped the frames all over the world. And so while I was growing up, he was always building bikes and working on new projects for other customers. And he built me my first bike when I was about just over 4 years old, and built a whole frame for it and built the front end. And I had this little chopper looking mini bike that I used to ride around. And
so I bet you were the coolest kid in the neighborhood.
we did live in town at that time. Grew up on an acreage, but moved to town by the time he built me that bike. So once in a while I'd rip it up and down the street, and it was a small enough town and we were close enough to the edge of town. You didn't have to worry about the cops being called.
And I'm guessing you though have progressed since the little chopper to some bigger bikes and so forth.
Absolutely. I've had a few bikes over the past few years, and just started a new project recently that I'm working on with my dad as well. So we're building an old knucklehead chopper, kind of a 60s chopper design, and so we're slowly picking away at that. But I've got a Harley that I ride all summer long as much as I can when I'm around, because it's kind of hard to haul guitars and gear on a bike.
Or at least it doesn't seem like that would be the best of ideas. Now,
No.
you mentioned, riding around. Where's your favorite place to ride, or your favorite places to ride?
Favorite places to ride around where I'm from, anyways, are west of the number 2 highway. There's a ton of great country out there, a lot of single lane back roads that are basically empty. You can view the Rocky Mountains from out there. There's lots of lakes and hills and curving roads, and it's just incredibly peaceful to ride around the countryside. I basically avoid everything to do with the city or highways because it's not enjoyable. We're on the bikes to have fun and enjoy the scenery, and so the farther I can get away from the people, the better.
Well, I think you went to what, Sturgis last year? Got to go down there.
I did, yeah. So one of the coolest rides down there is from Spearfish down to a little town called Deadwood, and you're riding through the Black Hills, and it's just wild, curvy roads the whole time. And they're not fast roads; they're maybe 30, 40 mile an hour kind of thing. But it's just beautiful country. So that's a second pick for favorite rides.
Well, it's pretty cool to be able to have that and get to enjoy that. Now, do you really get to spend a lot of time riding or fixing up bikes to kind of decompress from everything you do?
I wish I had more time to do that. It seems to be getting less and less every year, but I'm hoping this year, as my dad and I start working on this new project, I can take a little more time. I think last year maybe only put 1500K on the bike, or I guess 1000 miles, just over that on the bike. So it'd be nice if I could put more than that, but I'm glad when I get to at least.
Well, yeah, and I was gonna say you don't have the best season up there, I'm sure, or a long season to
No.
ride.
No, it's pretty much May through September, so it is a short window, and of course that's when shows get busy and there's summer festivals and all that stuff as well. So the time is definitely limited that we have to ride up here.
Well, and you talk about, getting to play musically, and if, like I said, this is perfect because if you're watching, you can see several guitars behind you. Did you get your first guitar at 7? Is that what I read?
I did. I got my first guitar when I was 7 years old. When I was 5, I started begging my parents for a guitar, and they were like, "You're 5 years old. In 2 weeks, you're going to want to do something different." And I just kept begging and begging and begging. And finally, after about a year of begging for a guitar, they said, "We'll save up your money from your report cards and your chores and your allowance, and eventually you'll have enough. You can buy your own guitar." And then I came out Christmas morning, just after I turned 7, and there was a brand new shiny black electric guitar sitting there. But it came with the condition that I had to pay for my first 6 months' lessons with all the money I'd saved up.
There you go. I like it. Those are smart. One, discipline parents to not just, cave right away, but two, to make, sure you actually take those lessons and see if you really enjoy it.
Exactly. And I mean, based on the amount of guitars behind me, I would say I enjoy it a little bit.
They created a bad habit for you, didn't they?
They did. They could have created worse bad habits, so I'm happy with this one.
That is true. Now, like I said, you can see the couple of the guitars behind you. Is that another thing that you collect occasionally, or maybe spend a few dollars on here and there?
Yeah, I'm always collecting and buying and selling stuff. Always try and find new pieces to add to the collection and new pieces that we can use in the studio, because I know a lot of people who don't play music go, "Why do you have so many guitars? Don't they all do the same thing?" But they actually surprisingly sound a lot different. And in the studio, it's really cool to be able to pull out a bunch of old acoustics or different electrics and get these weird, super unique sounds out of these things, and then end up using them on a record. And they're not something you would necessarily play live or take on tour, but in the perfect studio environment where you get to mic these things up and have these old instruments from the 40s and 50s making all these weird sounds, it's really cool. So I'm always on the hunt for, the strangest, weirdest sounding guitar I can find, and then send a few down the road too, because I only have so much room in here. And there's a lot more in the room than what you can see in just the picture.
So you have a habit.
I would say, yeah. There's
But
six
again, it's a
more in
good
front of
habit.
me. There's six more in front of me that you can't see, and then another 7 on the side here, so.
Well, hey, like you said, there's worse things that you could be into, and
Totally.
it seems like it's fun, and it's what I'm curious about is, have you always had a love of music? Clearly, you talked about getting a guitar at 5. Were you just always singing, grooving, even at a young age?
Yeah, there's always music in my house. My parents are, I mean, I'll say they're musical people, but they will both say they're not. My dad and mom can both play piano a little bit, but they're huge music lovers, huge music fans. And from the time I was born, there's always music playing in the house. My mom is a big 80s hard rock and hair metal fan, and my dad is a big southern rock and blues fan. So if I was in the shop, it was like ZZ Top and Stevie Ray Vaughan and stuff like that. And if I'm in the house, it was Judas Priest and Motley Crue and all those kind of things that I was listening to while I was growing up. So it was constantly around me, and I was constantly surrounded by music growing up.
I was gonna say that's a nice mix there, and as you hear your sound and people get to listen to your music, you can kind of see how that may have influenced it. And so, is that what you grew up on? I mean, I know obviously your parents, but what did you eventually gravitate toward, or was it just those love of those classics?
Yeah, kind of that was the stuff that I grew up on anyways, and that kind of forged my musical path the way that it went. But growing up in a small town, you're surrounded by all these country activities and country things. So even if you're not listening to country music, you're still going to the rodeo, you're still going to farm parties, you're still going to river parties, you're driving loud trucks around town and literally doing all of those cliche country things that you would do. So country music was always like kind of a sideline of all the things that I was doing in life. It wasn't necessarily what I was listening to when I was growing up, but it was kind of the theme of my life anyways.
Well, like you said, you grew up near Calgary and at times in there. And, for anyone that knows anything about the country, the Calgary stand, the big rodeo up there is pretty big, and a pretty big thing for those folks. So I'm guessing that made an impact on you too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always love the storytelling aspect of country music, and that it's I love rock and roll, but it doesn't always lyrics aren't always first in rock and roll, and I feel like lyrics are always first in country, and everybody loves a good story, so.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you kind of touched on this. What impact did growing up in Alberta, in near Calgary? I know at first you were well outside of it in a small town, and then just obviously being in Canada have on you personally and musically.
I think there are so many. Well, one, there's so little to do sometimes because it's so cold in the winter. You have to find things to do to occupy yourself. So that's listening to music or sitting in the basement playing guitar. I'm a pretty bad Canadian. I wasn't a hockey player. I didn't really love the cold. So I did everything I could to avoid the cold and pretend it wasn't cold outside. But I think that living in Canada, there are so many phenomenal bands and musicians that consistently tour the country, and there are so many opportunities to see live music growing up that I was always able to be exposed to it. And my parents did a really good job of always taking me to shows. My first concert I ever went to was Nickelback when I was 6 years old, and they were on one of their first big tours across Canada. And so, like, 6 years old, in the next town over, Nickelback's playing. And then as I was growing up, kind of wanted to go to more concerts than I did summer vacations, so we kind of switched, and my parents said, "Well, if you want to go to concerts, we can do that, but we'll do that instead of a summer vacation." And then it kind of became a free-for-all, so it was every concert that came through, whether it was in Calgary or Red Deer or wherever it was closest to us, my parents would take me to it. And so there was a lot of opportunities to get to be exposed to that live music, and I think that that's a really prominent thing here in Canada.
Well, and there's so many amazing acts that people probably are now just discovering as Spotify and other things kind of open up the borders, and music can travel everywhere.
Totally.
But for you, obviously getting to hear all that music, when did you start to decide to play music live? Because that's a whole nother transition.
Yeah, well, actually, my first live show was about 6 months after I got my first guitar. And I had went to my I think it was grade two teacher and said, "Hey, I've been playing guitar. Can I bring in my guitar and play a show for the kids?" They're like, "Yeah, sure." So I brought in my guitar, and I think I'd learned like six intros to songs at that point. It was like Back in Black and Iron Man and Smoke on the Water and all those like first tunes that you learn. So that was the first show I'd done. And then when I was about 11 or 12, I did a couple other shows and put together like a little band with some guys from another town. And there's lots of opportunity to play live as well. And of course, being in a small town, the school's always putting on talent shows and doing things like that and giving opportunities for the kids in town to showcase their talents, whatever that is that they're doing. So talent shows and everything like that. And when I was 14, started a rock band with two brothers, and we played a bunch of shows kind of around Central Alberta. And then when I was about 16, I started kind of doing my own thing, playing solo acoustic shows. And I got a gig at a bar in Red Deer, about half an hour down the road. They didn't know I was 16, and they had hired me to play 3 45-minute sets acoustic, just solo, and it was once a month that I got this gig. So that was where I really cut my teeth for the first time, like having to fill out a whole night playing music. It wasn't just like a 20-minute set or things like that. And so I did that from the time I was 16 till probably just after graduation. And so that was 2 years of playing in a bar once a month, just on my own with my acoustic guitar. And so, yeah, it started out young, lots of shows, lots of opportunities to play.
I was going to say, nothing like going to a bar and cutting your teeth there. I'm sure they would let you know if they didn't like something.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of trial and error testing out tunes on the crowd.
But then obviously you decided to kind of give it a go professionally, you know, take that kind of next leap and kind of make it more of a career. When did you kind of realize that's what you wanted to do and music was where you saw yourself?
I think I always knew I wanted to do music full time. But when I graduated high school, I went to college, did 2 years there in Calgary for power engineering. So I have my third class steam ticket. And that was just something that I wanted to do. It wasn't something that like my parents forced me to do or things like that. And I think it was a really good opportunity for me to get out of the small town, meet a bunch of new people that were all working on something for a collective reason. High school, you're forced to be there. You're forced to be in the room with all these people. And when I moved to the city and went to college, got to meet all these people with a common goal of like, we're here for the same reason. And still played music on the side throughout going to college for 2 years there, and played some shows in Calgary, but it was kind of on the sidelines for that time. And when I graduated, I remember going back home to Innisfail, and I was talking with my mom and dad and said, hey, I've got something to tell you. I'm not going to get a job in the field I went to school for. I'm going to play music full time. I was 19 at the time, and my dad was like, that sounds great, but how are you going to pay your bills? Because there's still bills to pay. Life ain't free. You still got to pay rent here. You still got to live. So how are you going to make that work?
Smart parents.
Yeah, definitely smart parents. And so I had a job at the local Napa auto parts store. And my boss there, I talked to him, and he had basically offered me a job to work as much as I want or as little as I want. And if I needed to take any days off for music, he would let me do that. And basically for the next year and a half, I spent 6 days a week working there, would get to leave early. I'd come in early, could leave early. I'd drive to the city, play shows, kind of build up my reputation and name as an artist in the local area till I had enough shows that I thought I could go full time and make enough money playing full time. And in September of 2018, I quit my job there and have been full time since.
Well, I'm guessing you've gotten the validation to some degree. I know last year you were up for several Country Music Alberta Awards again this year, and last year you even took home Male Artist of the Year. So I'm guessing that was that validation. And what was it like to receive that and be part of that?
It was really cool. Last year was my sixth year going to the Country Music Alberta Awards. And I remember the first time I walked in the door, I didn't know anybody. It was just, I was completely green. It was basically like the massive imposter syndrome of like, I don't know anyone here. No one knows who I am. What am I doing? And the whole community of Country Music Alberta was incredibly welcoming. Met a ton of great people who were able to co-write with me and kind of give me some guidance and really turn into great friends after that. So to be nominated and then win an award was just like a really cool full circle moment where all the people that I've been looking up to and who have been mentors to me have now acknowledge the work that I'm doing, and it was just was really, really cool.
I was gonna say that's awesome to see. And you put it, like I said at the top of the show, you put out a new song, She's My Religion. How'd that song come to be, and why did you want to put that one out?
I was in Nashville in May of 2023 and was writing with a good friend of mine, Chris Yerchuk. He had come over to the house one night, and we spent probably about an hour just shooting the shit, catching up, and just having a great hang. And I'd actually come up with the idea of She's My Religion earlier that day. I don't remember how it came to be in my head, but it was like what sparked it in the afternoon. But it was the idea of, like, sometimes you find it hard to believe in things. Sometimes you find it hard to believe in yourself. We had just kind of gone through this whole 2 years of kind of chaos in the world, and you're trying to figure out what to believe, what not to believe. And I kind of looked at everything that was in my life and took stock of it and realized that there's a couple things that I really got to be thankful for and a couple things that I know I can always believe in. And so I brought this idea of, like, She's My Religion. And it's kind of like the old, when you have like a car mechanic manual, it's like, that's your gospel to work on that car. It's like, you always know if you open that book up, you're going to find the answers you need. And I'm very fortunate to have a real good partner in life. And she's someone that I can always believe in and look to when I'm feeling lost.
Well, and I feel like it's even more pressure when you're writing the song about them. Was she the first one you kind of played that for, or how'd that go?
It was, actually. My folks were in Nashville with us as well, and she was down there. And Chris and I finished writing the song, and it was my parents' last night in town. So I went out and met them, and we all went out for the night. And I was just completely stoked on the tune. I knew it was something I wanted to record. And I had this little voice memo on my phone. And I remember we were sitting in Winners or Losers, the bar, and it was so noisy. And I was trying to play this voice memo on the phone into their ears so they could hear it. And no one could hear it because it's just too loud in the bar. But I remember sitting there trying to tell them, like, I got to record this song. It's one of my favorites I've written. And then finally got to show it to them the next day, and everybody liked it. So figured it had to be recorded.
Well, it's a great song, and it's cool to see that. And, I know that's a follow-up to just a couple singles that you put out last year, What You Don't Know and the Other Guy. Again, with those, there's that kind of storytelling element to everything.
Totally, yeah. That's, like I was saying, my favorite part of country music is, regardless of where the production goes and whether it's a hard rock production or a pop country production, if you strip it down and you just have an acoustic guitar and tell the story, you're going to tell a story that hopefully connects with people on some way, whether that brings them happiness or gets them through a hard time. And to me, that's something that's really important when writing tunes, is writing something that's going to tell that story and convey the message and make people feel something.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, for you, you put out a lot of songs, or, you've written a lot of songs. And have had other artists cut them. What is it about songwriting that you just love and are cool to, let others kind of take it if it fits them?
I think there are so many stories to tell, and not every story that I write is going to be necessarily my story. Where that's the coolest thing about co-writing is you get in a room with a bunch of people and everyone starts throwing ideas out, and you could quickly decide that you're going to be writing for another artist in the room, and they've got this story they really want to tell. And I think ultimately, it's a pretty big honor to be able to help that person tell their story and help bring it to life in a way that they want to share it. And I think that goes the same for me, to be able to have people that I can trust in a room to help tell a story and help bring out my story to the best way possible, and give me something that I can convey and share with everyone listening.
Well, and for you, is it an idea or is it an experience? How does that initial spark kind of start?
I think it's all the above. I know I've written songs that are about whole nights and whole experiences, or it could be one line that I heard in a movie that sparked an idea of, like, there's a whole story I can dream up of based on this one line I heard. And I think that's also the cool thing, is it doesn't necessarily have to be anyone's story. You can just write a story that doesn't have to be anyone who's in the room's actual story. You can just have an idea or have a vision of something you want to say and tell that story. And if you're able to come up with it, I'm sure there's people that are going to be able to relate to it.
Well, like you said, I think that's the coolest part is when people can see themselves in the song and, kind of take that journey with you. And I feel like this is a fun question, maybe a tough question for you. Do you prefer the creating the song, like the music to it, or do you prefer the writing of the song? What do you prefer more?
I think I'll say I equally like both of them, which is a cop out of an answer. But it's so cool because when you write a song that's just stripped down with an acoustic guitar and a vocal, and then you get to see it come to life in the studio and the whole production come to life. And there's so many ways that you can take every song and make them come to life. You can tell a lot of different stories just based on the production of the song. And it's cool to see how the production determines what the message sounds like. For example, What You Don't Know that we put out last year, the fully produced version kind of feels like a weekend fling is over and you're like wondering where this girl went. You don't really know, but it's just a weekend fling. Then we flipped it on its head. We did a stripped down piano ballad, and all of a sudden, instead of weekend fling, it feels like you're losing a 10-year relationship of someone that you've loved forever. And it's the same song, same chords, same words, but just the way that we convey it gives a completely different story.
Well, like you said earlier, you get to use those different guitars to bring different sounds and to see where you can maybe enhance a story. I remember, I think I was talking to Del Barber about when he recorded in like a grain silo to get a whole new experience. And I'm like, that's taking creativity to a whole new level.
Absolutely. There's so many creative things that you can do when it comes to the production of a song and ways that you can bring it to life. The options are really endless.
And for you, you also created an album a couple years ago, Good Things. What was it like to bring that to life? Because it's one thing to be able to put out a couple singles here and there, but it's a whole nother thing to bring a project like that and be able to put it out there for everybody.
Totally. It was a really, really rewarding experience getting to put this body of work together. And it's just four tunes that are done two ways, fully produced and live acoustic. So there's eight songs on the record or EP or whatever that's called these days. And it's kind of the first four songs are kind of the life lessons that I've learned up to that point about there's good relationships and bad relationships and how to party and how good things take time and that it's all worth it in the end when you find a good relationship. And it's just kind of all those life lessons and life stories that I'd learned brought together in one package. And having both versions of them, both the fully produced and the live acoustic, was a really cool way to kind of showcase the songs of how they were written and what it was like that day when we were in the room writing them and kind of give the listener an inside look on what that experience was like.
Well, and I was curious because I know you put a good bit of miles on and you do a good bit of touring and playing shows. Is it just that ability to kind of take a song in a different place and connect to the audience that you just love so much?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think every room is going to react to a song differently. And some rooms are going to be stripped down, really intimate rooms. And having kind of both versions of all the songs allow us to take it to like a Nashville North stage at the Calgary Stampede with 5,000 people and a full band, or to a stripped down little room with 30 people and an acoustic guitar and tell the same message, give the same experience, but a completely different one at the same time.
Well, and is there like a favorite song, whether it's yours or someone else's, that you just love to perform these days?
Man, that's hard. I feel like one of my all-time favorites, I'll give you one of both. I'll give you one of my favorites to play live, and then I'll give you a favorite song of someone else's to play live. One of my favorite covers to play live is Pride and Joy by Stevie Ray Vaughan. He's one of my biggest influences on my guitar playing growing up, still is. And it's so fun to toss solos around with the band and have my keyboard player go nuts on the keyboards. And we got another guitar player and a dobro player, and to get to hear everybody kind of come to life and give their own solo in the song is a lot of fun. So that's one of my favorite covers to play. One of my favorite originals to play, it's so tough. Probably Country Cliche is one of my favorite live songs to play because it's, in a sense, lyrically so ridiculous, and musically it is just so much fun to play. I feel like it gets heavier and funkier every time we play it live, and the band is always pulling things out of their back pocket and playing cool licks, and it's never the same any night we play it. So
I was gonna say that's a fun song. I'm guessing you had fun writing that one. Was it just one of those days where you were like trying to come up with something and everyone's throwing out the same old cliches, or how'd that one come to be?
It was myself, one of my producers, Spencer, and another friend of ours, Brad Saunders, all sitting around, and we were just like strumming on an acoustic guitar, and Brad literally just said, "Take a sip," and then I said, "Pack a dip," and it was like those are the first two lines of the song, and we're like, that's like kind of hilarious but kind of cool. And then we were all having a couple drinks, we're like, should we try and write something? Sure. And I think like 45 minutes later the song was done. So
it's amazing how sometimes it all comes together so quickly. Other times it might be a couple months or a year or more. And
Literally.
You know, I know something that you've been doing for a good while now too is you've done the Ride to Remember. How and why did that come to be?
So Ride to Remember is a charity event that I run every year in support of the Alzheimer's Society of Calgary. And growing up, like I was saying, I grew up in my dad's motorcycle shop, surrounded by bikes. And my mom is a continuing care nurse in a continuing care facility, looking after a lot of folks with Alzheimer's and dementia and late stages of life. And so when I was about 7, I had said to my mom, I was like, I spent all this time at dad's work. I know what he does. Can I come to your work and see what you do? She's like, yeah, sure. So I started volunteering with Alberta Health Services then when I was 7 years old, and would go in and play cards or read books or with the residents that were there. And growing up, my great-grandpa and a few other family members had Alzheimer's, so I was super familiar with it. It wasn't something that was necessarily scary or an unknown thing to me. So when chatting with folks at the continuing care facility where my mom worked, it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. I was kind of used to it. And when I was about 13 or 14, I started bringing in my guitar and playing music for the residents. And I remember being about 14 years old, and I played an Elvis tune and a Johnny Cash tune. And there was a couple residents there who were very late stage Alzheimer's and dementia, and typically they were non-responsive to everything that was happening. And I started playing these songs and their eyes lit up. They started clapping. They started singing along. And to go from, like I said, being non-responsive to all of a sudden singing along and clapping and knowing all the words to the song, it was pretty impactful for me as like a 14-year-old kid to see what music can actually do. I mean, we all know that it makes us feel good and we enjoy it and we tap our feet and party to it or cry to it. But to see what it can bring someone who is not able to bring those memories on their own. And so in 2019, I kind of had an opportunity to support a charity or create a charity event. And I thought I should bring kind of everything that was my life together, which was motorcycles, music, and volunteering at the continuing care facility all together. And I created Ride to Remember. And the first year it was a motorcycle ride. We had about 50 motorcycles out. I had a concert with 3 bands. And then we raised funds for the Alzheimer's Society of Calgary. And it has slowly grown every year since then. The first year we raised $1,500. Second year we raised just over $3,000. Third year we raised just over $7,000. And then last year, for the fourth year, we had a goal of $15,000 because we've kind of just been doubling it every year. And we ended up raising just over $40,000 in one night.
So a little jump, And I mean, how cool is it to see that, you know, something that's impacted you and that kind of has been, you know, huge in your life, be able to impact others and you be able to kind of use the things that you've gained along the way to give back?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really cool. We're getting ready to announce the 5th annual event this year, and our goal is $50,000 for the 5th year. And again, it's going to be at a bigger location again. And to see the impact and the reach that we've been able to have, both on the Alzheimer's Society of Calgary with the funds that we're raising, as well as the awareness that we're raising for a lot of people who are just finding out that their family members and loved ones have Alzheimer's and how to deal with it. And the money that we raised last year was able to keep the a phone line open for the Alzheimer's Society for the distress call center so that people could call in if they were having trouble at home with their loved one. And so that money that we raised basically kept an open line open so anyone could call in at any time and get the help that they need.
Well, that's amazing. That's awesome to see. And as we, you know, kind of wrap up our chat, you know, like I said, you've put out She's My Religion. You put out a kind of an album EP a couple years back. More new music coming this year. What can you tell us that won't get you in trouble?
We've got a lot more music coming this year. Just last week, we released an acoustic version of She's My Religion as well, and we're going to be having a ton more acoustic versions of songs coming out, as well as a ton more versions of fully produced songs coming out. And later this year, we're going to have a record coming out, and it's a real big package of tunes. So there'll be lots of new music by the end of the year for everybody to listen to.
I love it. I love it. And obviously, you know, if you're making music, I'm guessing folks can also expect some shows and some other fun things too along the ride.
Absolutely. Yeah. Actually, next week is our next show in town. It's a full band one down at Grey Eagle Casino in Calgary. After that, we're out in Cochrane opening for Gord Bamford, another Alberta boy. And then we've got a ton more shows to announce throughout the year that are going to be filling up the summer. They'll all be kind of announced in April, May. So you can stay tuned to my socials and website for all of the rest of the show announcements that are coming.
See, perfect. You teased it, set them up. They need to go there, follow you. And like I said, Devin, you make some good music, some cool music. And I appreciate you sharing a drink with me and having a good conversation, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for chatting. It was an absolute pleasure, and hopefully we can do it again.
Absolutely.
Find more from Hops and Spirits at hopspirits.com.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.